Welcome to Podnuts, the Computer Repair Podcast, episode number 220, IT Security Policies. I'm your host, Jeff Halish. This is our live call-in show for computer repair techs. We answer your questions on running and operating your computer repair business. The call-in number is 1-888-697-0162. Computer Repair Podcast is brought to you by Ninja, the simple-to-use remote monitoring and management solution. Try it free at info.ninjamsp.com/podnuts. Let me introduce the co-hosts. We have John Dubinsky from the Maven Group. How you doing, John?
Holla. Oh, wait.
That's the other guy.
I'm doing well. Thanks, Jeff.
Good. Also joining us, we have Paco LeBron from Prodigy Techs. How you doing, Paco?
Better than good. Better than most.
Awesome, man. And we have joining us, he hasn't been back in a while, but it's nice to have him back, Tom Lawrence from Lawrence Technology Services. How you doing, Tom?
I'm doing great. It is good. Wonderful out.
Good to have you here. And he's sitting in his wonderful office, all surrounded by computers and whatnot. So
stuff.
All right. So let's go ahead and start off. And John, if you would like to kick it off this week again, go ahead and let us know a tip or story that we could learn from.
I'm number one. So no particular story. I just used a couple sites that I thought were interesting that I knew about that I haven't had reason to use in some time. So I thought I would pass them on here. So one of them, and I'll put all these links in the show notes, obviously. We've all used VirusTotal before, maybe to upload a file to check it for a virus or see if there's something going on. But you guys, have you used it to do URL checking before? So if you get a URL in your email and you're not quite sure, obviously, you can right-click on that link, copy it, the URL, go to VirusTotal, paste it in VirusTotal, and it'll tell you a little bit about that URL, where it's located, if it thinks it's malicious, so on and so forth. So I thought that was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. Now, how many people, John, actually click on links in their emails?
Everybody. At least all my clients. You know, I guess the story on that one is I had a customer that swore that the link just wasn't working, and thank goodness for good endpoint protection, because I kept getting all these notifications from the endpoint protection that her computer, about every 6 minutes, I'd get a notification, blocked, threat blocked. So I finally called her and I said, what are you doing? I'm trying to get this link to open in my email. So I ran into something, I don't know how useful this is, but it's called routercheck.com.
Okay.
So it's a little Android app you download to your phone, and then you run this application, and it does some tests against your router. Basically, it'll look for some things like some of the ASUS flaws, the Netgear flaws that have been out, just some basic checks on your router. I thought that was pretty useful, maybe for somebody that's not very knowledgeable. At least they can find out what their router's doing and if they have anything really large outstanding. And the same company is coming out with something called Things Check, which is going to be for IoT devices.
Okay.
So I thought that was kind of neat.
Would this be something similar to like what Digital Shield does? Like a very, very basic version of it? Or
Digital Shield's more doing like port scanning to see if it can find any open ports and get through some other basic things. When I looked through the notes on RouterCheck, it was looking for flaws in specific things. Like I fired up here while we're talking. If I fill the void here. Paco.
Sure.
While I'm looking, so from
looking at the site, it looks like it's got a couple cool things where basically why a router so vulnerable, it got a lot of information stuff, and it looks like it's geared toward more consumers is what I'm looking at here. Consumers, ISPs, router companies. So, I mean, it looks like it's on the Android, like you said, so sorry for those who are on iOS, but which Jeff has no mercy on, but we won't go into
what? We love people that are on iOS.
It's basically looking for some general vulnerabilities. So if I look through what ASUS command execution, Netgear command injection, Netgear authentication bypass, I don't know what a TR069 is, but port open, open RTSP video, YFATCH. I mean, it looks like it's just doing some testing vulnerabilities against known vulnerabilities. Okay. That was better than nothing. So I ratted against some things.
Similar to like the Netgear thing that's going on?
Absolutely. Got it. The other thing I had is I had a customer that decided to roll out their own new Wix website.
Oh,
And so I had to change. So I changed their DNS for them. And then they called me back in 10 minutes and said, my site's not working. You know, I thought you said you made the changes. Well, then I had to go into the whole propagation thing, blah, blah, blah. And she just wasn't grasping how this worked. So there's a site out there called whatsmydns.net. Whatsmydns.net. If you go there, put in your domain name, it'll show you if your site is properly propagated against the IP address all over the planet.
Nice.
So, you know, it does like east of the United States, west of the United States, overseas, blah, blah, blah. Tell you when it's propagating correctly. So, and it's kind of visual. I mean, you can do this through a lot of other DNS tools and stuff like that, but this is kind of visual that you could send an end user to. So, gotcha.
Very cool.
They must have
I'm going to throw out there today.
They must have saw the Super Bowl commercial for Wix.
Create a website now. All right, Paco, what do you got?
It's actually been really quiet the last 11 days. I actually made a couple changes that I'm trying to figure out if those changes caused things to go quiet. But last year, the same time around, it was kind of a slow month. So I'm kind of dealing with all that. But the biggest thing is I'm auditing all my business clients and making sure they have their backups in place. Those who only have one set of backups or no backup, and essentially going to send them, I'm going to shoot out a new our previous newsletter that we had with TechNibble on will that click cost you thousands. And after I send that out to them, I'm going to follow up a call saying, hey, look, we have this going on with your business. We really need to start doing a three-pronged approach like you preach all the time. I was actually just talking to an accounting company that is an actual, I guess, family. It's basically my cousin's husband. And he basically is just going blind. He has no backups. He has, you know, and he really wants to try and step up his efforts. And, you know, we talked about offsite and cloud and just something bare bones just to get it done, because he's doing a lot of bookkeeping and he's doing a lot of consumer and business taxes. So that's a lot of information. Ooh. He wants to make sure that he's backed up, because if his computer just went down, or, you know, God forbid somebody went in and stole his machine, he's dead in the water. Right. And there's all their compliance stuff into that. But that's essentially what I'm doing this week, along with updating a couple things with the business as far as like forms and all that stuff. So nothing too big, but just auditing and picking particular areas that can be improved with the businesses and starting to try and get some clients and upsell income coming in from that way.
I'll tell you, you know, one of the things you talked about, you made some changes and you're concerned that it might have affected your business. Here's the thing. A lot of people, and I used to do this way back in the day, a lot of people will make a change and they'll let it ride for a couple of weeks and they'll go, oh, wait, everything's changed. No, this business is very cyclical. So it's up and down.
Right.
And a lot of times, that's why I always tell people, make very small changes and let it ride for a few months. To kind of, and then gauge where you're at, because then you'll get an average over that time period. Because people, and it's not, I'm not picking on you, Paco, but I hear it all the time.
Even if you were.
People, okay. Yeah, I know. I wouldn't care, but I'm just trying to be nice. I'm trying to turn over a new leaf.
It's an education.
Yes. So there's a lot of people out there who are concerned with, and anytime they make a change that, oh, my business is affected. It's like, no, people, just let it ride out a little bit. And you'll understand how it's either helping you or hurting you, but you gotta give things time.
Well, there was a phone system change, so that's why I have to make sure that it is working properly. Yeah, right. Yes. So yeah. Because I turned off my IVR. I finally made the decision of just turning it off and just letting calls go.
I'm sorry, you said three letters, which I have no idea what the hell that means.
Oh, you don't know what an IVR? Anyway, all right. Sorry.
I know what an IVR.
Okay,
go ahead.
So an automated prompt that you hear whenever you call to a business and you have to press those prompts of press one for so-and-so, zero for agent. Okay. I had that set up with my 8x8 system.
Okay.
Now, as I was looking through.
Actually, that's an interactive voice response, Jeff.
Thank you, John.
Well, I'm sorry. I thought he wanted the meeting.
No, you're explaining it well. Go ahead. Keep going.
But so I get on average about 250 calls a month.
Okay.
Through my phone number. But only 60 of them make it to my answering service that I had at the time. So it's filtering out 200 calls, which I imagine are going to be telemarketers, robocalls,
right?
You know, whatever the case. But there was a big conversation that was happening over on one of the Facebook groups is, you know, it's a double-edged sword. What if you're turning off people that are calling in just to speak to someone, they hear this and then they kind of just go on to the next one on the list. So there's that. I'm not too worried about that one. I'm more worried about that. I switched because I mentioned this before, and either here or on the Computer Business Podcast, is I changed my answering service where now my office is picking up the phones between 8:30 and 5, the hours that I'm actually open. Now, the reason why this is different is because there's only two people versus an actual answering service that's picking up every single call that comes through. So if they're busy, it goes to voicemail. And if they don't want to leave the voicemail, from just me, I've been from being so many years in customer service, I know that if they don't get anybody on the first try, they're going down the list. So I don't know if that's something that's also playing around as well. So there's those two things. And there's a third one I can't recall. Oh, the fact that it's February and last year, end of February before that, we were slow. So it could be like you just said, a cycle is just hitting that cycle for right now. Right. And then maybe in March it'll play out. So that's why I'm waiting until probably in the middle of March to decide if I'm going to make a change back. But I got to look at the changes that I've done now and really iron it out and test it out to make sure nothing is really broken.
You know, as far as phone systems, I will tell you this, in having to get on and talk to customer service over the past week with several different vendors for various reasons, I literally just want to reach out and just punch somebody anytime I have to go through a phone tree. I can't stand it. And I'm like going, I wish companies could get away from that. And I know it's an impossibility and you got to have that because you got to be able to route calls. I get it, but it's just so frustrating. And they make it nowadays, a lot of these companies are making it so that they don't even really want to talk to you. You have to jump through hoops in order to talk to a customer service rep. So with that being said, I think people out there that are actually talking to their customers, even if they're leaving a voicemail, getting back to them right away, you're going to have a lot better chance of landing that sale than the person that's got to sit there and try to figure out all these different phone systems and punch this for that. And it's just a mess.
Well, I come to find out that as I was modifying things, as I was making the change, was there was one section that I completely forgot, where is if no one makes a prompt, it'll transfer the call. Well, it was leading to the answering service that shut down back in March.
Oh,
so
and that's not good.
Right. So when I flipped everything over to the office, I changed all that. But it's all about me trying to, exactly like you just said, I made the changes to improve the customer experience. So it's more personable than an actual machine.
Right.
So that's what I'm trying to go away from and trying to fix all that. So that's currently what's going on, at least for the month of February for me.
All right, cool.
Isn't that our second IVR story of a sort of an IVR nightmare? Didn't Carruthers have a little problem?
Yeah,
he did too. Yeah, his wasn't. I can't remember exactly what happened, but basically, because he's both in the U.S. and Canada, the wrong prompt was pointed to the wrong voicemail or whatever. So, oh, what a mess. Anyways,
yeah. While you're doing that, I looked up, you know, our calls, because we look at that too. We look at how many calls didn't make it through because we have an IVR prompt as well. So it's definitely. I'm always thinking about that. I mean, out of 700 phone calls, there was 136 of them that didn't go through.
Okay,
but that's common. We're realizing that when we've looked up the phone numbers, are always those weird 91 something numbers, mm-hmm. spammers. I think they just hear the IVR and go, oh well. You know, they just give up.
Or if it's a robocall, a lot of times what I'll catch on a voicemail, I'll catch just a portion of the prompts. If you want to talk to somebody, press this now. And it's like, what are you doing? So, yeah, I can't stand that type of business either as far as robocalls and all that.
But so many of them.
Apparently, it must work for some people or they wouldn't do it, right?
Yeah. It has to be like spam, right?
Throw as much against the wall as you possibly can and see what sticks. Apparently, there's enough stupid people out there. But anyways. All right, Tom, what do you have for us this week?
What do I have for us? Like, what have I been doing this week? We've been finishing up a really big wiring project. That's been a lot of fun. That's the one I flew my drone through the building. And actually, just before I joined in, I was organizing all the video footage that we have to do the project from start to finish. So the client had some hiccups, and I think included firing the architectural firm that designed their building. like partway through the project. Oh. And it definitely included the city putting a sticker and a chain on the door that says no one's allowed in here because someone didn't pull the permits properly. So,
oh, that's not good.
Yeah. So this project was supposed to be delivered and done, I think, in August of last year. It's okay. Done now. They moved in this weekend.
That's a few months late.
A few months late and a lot of project delays. I'm glad we got a big deposit and then a check in between. But now we're finally ready for final billing. But the scope of the project was exceeded. We kept reminding them, like, you guys like changed so many things because the architect wasn't based in reality. That's why they had to fire their architect, I guess.
Okay.
So it didn't really work out quite so well.
And I think we run into a lot of that stuff when it comes to IT services themselves is most people don't operate in reality. They're like, oh, hey, nope. We can just do this or that and throw this together. And my cousin's got this free program that we can throw on that. And it's like, really? What? You know what? You run your business and make your widgets doing whatever it is you do. And you let us figure out what you need to keep you up and running and in business on the IT front.
And this is a 120 person office, 130 people in this building. So there's a lot of office space that we had to wire. I mean, overall, it's about 300 some odd drops.
Wow.
So,
okay.
And that level of disorganization.
Yeah. And yeah, the other part of that is sometimes when organizations get too big, we can look at the big companies out there, they're, one hand doesn't know what the other hand is doing. And so Everything is just kind of like, yeah, we're going to do this over here. Nobody knows what's going on over there. And somehow, though, despite ourselves, it all works out. It's just frustrating sometimes.
It does. We've been doing a lot of work for drilling fiber for a couple local companies, too. And that's been fun because some of the levels of disorganization have been, I just look at it, it's all billable. That's why I keep telling my guys when they get aggravated, I'm like, you're paid by the hour. Just hang out with them. The job is set. If they don't show up, we still bill them for going out to the site.
Absolutely. There you go. That's awesome. Very cool. All right. So I put together a couple of things. Actually, I was sent a couple of emails. And so I actually put this down just for Paco. Paco, I thought you would find this interesting. So Techna LLC, my summary for January. Now this is for Google My Business or whatever they're calling it now. 378 people saw your business on Google search. Now, remind you, this is no AdWords or anything like that. 210 people saw your business on Google Maps. And 3 people asked for directions to your business. So I just thought you would find those numbers interesting in when you're out there. I found them interesting that I came up that many times in a month. 500 sometimes between Maps and search. When I have no Google AdWords or anything out there, just my website presence and plus all the stuff I do on the internet probably helps. So,
yeah, mine is 2,781 saw my ratings, 2,673 found me on Maps, 26 people asked for directions, and 1 person reviewed my business.
Now, do you know, since you do have those numbers, do you know whether or not that is based on an area? And I can't remember, I can't even remember when I set mine up years ago. I must have changed it because I've moved a couple times since then.
When you say area, what do you mean?
Well, so I live in the city of Canton, but right. I don't live in the city of Chicago. Chicago is going to be a lot more people in that area. Saying.
No, it's, if I'm not mistaken, I think that's total. I think that's everyone who's found you on search. Okay, so if you want to do that, I would imagine... Yeah, it gets dicey because I would say Maps would probably be a more truer number. But even then, if someone went on Maps to search for you versus a Google search, you know what I mean? So it could be either way. I would say Google Maps is probably the more bigger number, but mine only fluctuated by 120 between the two.
Okay, gotcha. So. Very interesting. All right. And then I also got another email, which I found interesting. And this email was basically says, hi, Jeff, I have an opening for a desktop support technician with, we won't mention the company's name, in Macomb, Michigan, that I thought it might interest you. Oh, so then they go down and tell all the things that they do. And yeah, I'd be a great desktop technician. No, no, thank you. Somehow, supposedly, my resume went out. Now, granted, we talk about spam all the time. And with Google, and Tom, I know you can attest to this. Most spam does not get through. John, you too. So Google is great as far as their email, whether you're using Google Apps or whatever they're calling it now, or you're just using a regular, you know, free Gmail account. The spam detection is awesome. But the other accounts I have for like the podcast, not so much. So I get probably 2 to 3 pieces of spam mail in there every, and it's always the same ones. And I'm thinking, wouldn't you give up after a while? But apparently not. So they keep sending, check your account here, tinyurl.whatever. You're like, okay, yeah, let me click on that. Let's see what, maybe I'll take some of that, take that URL and throw it into VirusTotal, John, and we'll see what comes up.
That's good advice.
Customized ones that lead you to Google Docs are the real scary ones, because they had those landing pages that inside of a Google Doc that was a little attack Google was facing for a little while.
Ooh.
It was basically asked you to re-authenticate into Google Docs so you'd put your credentials in. And most people, because if I sent you a Google Doc, it may prompt you for re-authentication.
Sure.
So people were thinking about it. They'd open the Google Doc and they were legit sending you a Google Doc, but it would take you to that prompt and immediately install a bot in your Google account to then collect all your email addresses and send out to all your friends the same Google Doc and collect their credentials. And you can see how this was exponential.
Right, right. Exactly. Golly, man. Oh, anyways. All right. So, the only other thing I had was a weird situation real quick. And I remoted a new machine this weekend and was helping a customer out. As most of you know, I usually only work with the customers that I've worked with over the past few years. So I don't really take on a whole lot once, just because I don't want to. But this particular customer has been a good customer. And anyways, they had what they thought was a virus or malware or whatever. Nobody really knows the difference. So I got in there, clean the system up, but there's a couple things that they have. The Norton Internet Security Suite, which is supposed to be the cat's meow as far as antivirus and whatnot, according to all these companies. We won't mention any names like AV Comparatives or anything like that. But anyways, so I got in there, cleaned it out, but I've had this problem before where I've actually had to uninstall Norton and reinstall it because there were some issues. It was slowing some things down. It was messing some things up. And so I did that. Anyways, I got this machine clean. Didn't take that much time. No big deal. Got it clean. Everything's ready to go. And I hand it back over to the customer. I tell him, hey, run it for a couple days. Let me know if everything's running right. Because he was also having an email issue with Comcast where it's on the Comcast server side, where he couldn't delete his emails, so it had nothing to do with anything he was doing or anything that could be done. Comcast knew it was a problem, but they weren't really addressing it. So a lot of customers out there were having the same problem. But anyways, so I got it cleaned up. He goes to turn the computer on, goes to the browser. Now, mind you, I cleared the browsers out, or so I thought. Except I uninstall Google Chrome, which I tend to do from time to time. Not always. Sometimes I'll do a hard reset on it. I reinstall Google Chrome and must have forgotten to reset browsing history and stuff like that. So anyway, I don't know where he went. Maybe he went to a shortcut. I ran it. No problems. I went to different sites. No problems. He gets on there. All of a sudden gets the browser redirect. 1-800-SPANK-ME. call this number now to basically get, get support because your computer's locked. And so he called, it was like no more than 10 minutes later. And I go, you got to be kidding me. For a turnaround like this, you're just like going, unbelievable. I remote back in, no big deal. I clear the browser out, gone. Hey, you're good to go now. So I haven't heard from him since. So we should be good. But I just couldn't believe it was that quick. I'm like, why? And so my point is the browser redirects, even though people try to protect against them, there is nothing that I know of right now that basically will stop those browser redirects. There's no tools. There's nothing out there to put in your browser. Nothing. And I know people have talked about it, that there are things you can put in there to help protect you, but I've seen it get around all kinds of stuff. Now, this is Norton Internet Security Suite with the browser stuff running to try to stop some of this stuff, right? Phishing attacks, so on and so forth. Nothing. And I'd already set all that stuff up, and it still went right through and said, hey, here I am. So anyways, I thought that was very interesting.
I think the problem's only going to get more exasperated. So, for example, we take the Netgear logons problem where you can easily push things in there. And we found a couple of those viruses now that have identities for about 60 different router models, and they will change the DNS. And right. That makes it even harder to troubleshoot because it'll work at your place, but it won't work at their place because yes. They have hijacked DNS.
Yep.
So we're going to start seeing that as an even more, a more popular attack vector pretty soon.
Exactly.
And it'll be that much, you know, we have to check the routers. We have to clear the browser cache, reset the browser, then check the DNS on the Netgear going, okay, you probably got this compromised too.
Oh, it's never ending. And that's why I say that's okay though, because that's what gives us jobs. It gives us something to do. So anyways, all right, let's go ahead and take a quick break. And then we're going to get into our main topic. All right. Our show today brought to you by Ninja, the remote monitoring and management solution to help you become more efficient, more productive, and more profitable. With Ninja, you can have a faster fixed response time and offer preventative maintenance to your customers. Ninja understands what you need to run your business, which is why their RMM solution is integrated with tools that you use every day. Ninja provides competitive pricing, patch management, antivirus, email, SMS alerting. You can be up and running quickly with minimum training time. You have TeamViewer integration for that remote support. It's one solution for managed and non-managed clients alike. Network visibility inside the RMM. Easy to read dashboards. Ninja is always adding new features like their latest beta release, a powerful new device search where you can create custom queries and export the list to show your customers. A new executive style report showing important system metrics such as health score, software added or removed, hardware changes, and TeamViewer connections. Ninja is offering Podnuts a free 30-day trial when you decide to buy, a 10% discount. To take advantage of this offer, go to info.ninjamsp.com/podnuts. All right, let's move into our main topic, and that is IT security policies as they relate to IT companies. So this was brought to us by our very own Tom Lawrence, who thought this would be a good thing to talk about. So Tom, what were your thoughts when you brought this topic up?
Between Reddit and other people I know in the industry, you know, and talking to other people, it's crazy. There are so many companies, and I see that there's been a few people like in our sysadmin and Reddit that have just done like, I worked for a big MSP. I haven't worked there 6 months. By the way, they still use the same policy. They came up with a scheme of using the address plus the owner's last name for every admin password for every individual business because no one wanted to actually take the time to document it. So they just came up with common schemas. I know one of my friends worked for another local company, and it's just insane. They literally share all their passwords with Outlook notes on a hosted Exchange account. That's how they're large scale. He's a team of 30 people.
Wow. And
I'm just like, that's just how they do it. And he's like, yeah, we've always done it this way. I'm like, just no two-factor authentication, no notes. I'm really realizing a lot of these IT people are kind of all over the place. And of course, we see all the horror stories with the backups. They're just not doing what they're charging for. We've taken over IT accounts from a lot of companies. We pointed out on an interview that there was no backups when we went there because they want to have us. And the other guy's trying to defend it, but he can't because the guy who's been charging them for offsite backups, there's no software on their computer that's showing how the backups are working. And of course, they also lost a file and he couldn't restore it. And he made some excuse, but there's a lot of these IT companies that just don't follow strong security procedures. They don't use two-factor authentication. And then documentation is a whole nother disaster. I don't know. I see some of these IT companies like, let's jump with IT Glue, which is a really cool product, but scares me a little bit because you're talking about putting all of your customers' passwords into one company's website. One, what if they go out of business? Two, what if they get hacked is the even bigger scary part. I mean, I know IT Glue has an export model, so you can export your data back out, but that's a huge threat surface. That's a large attack vector that I'm sure every hacker is going after because why hack a company? Why not hack IT Glue that has the passwords to all the things?
Right.
And you're talking about putting your domain credentials in there. They're everything you need to own that company. If we're, you know, an MSP and we're managing everything IT top to bottom, everything I need to be that company is now stored in IT Glue, a third party website that you have now entrusted with all the keys to that kingdom. Matter of fact, because we're servicing almost 400 businesses, we have the keys to a lot of small businesses.
Right.
If we were to stick all that just in the cloud somewhere, that's a big potential risk right there. So I don't know. What's your guys' thoughts?
I got to interrupt you. You and I need to sit down with a bottle of whiskey and just...
Why does it got to be whiskey?
Whatever. Like soda pop, whatever.
What's wrong with it?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Absolutely.
So
I got to interrupt, but what's the solution, Tom?
Where do you park
your guys' stuff? Yeah.
We use, and I'm not saying we are the geniuses that have solved this problem, but I like self-hosted solutions. Actually, how we do it is we have an internal customer endpoint sale system, which we are working on open sourcing, if I can ever find a good developer. the code's horrible. That's all I would say. But that's another topic. The other thing we actually do is because it's all web-based, everything our whole system is, it's locked down internal VPN on its own separate network, on its own virtual machine. Everything's password protected. The only downside about doing SSL for internal lockdown things is you have to self-sign certificates. So you get the little stupid message you got to click through, but whatever. And then we actually build all of our client database using a wiki. So for it links directly to the wiki. We use... you know how in Wikipedia you can do like the expandable. So when you log on and land on any one of the clients, you have to expand out to CD passwords. But the wiki is not publicly accessible, even inside the building. It's password. It does all my tracking. So each person, each one of my techs has a login. I know what they changed. I have an entire change history of it. No one has permission but me to mass delete anything. But they modify every client as if they're a wiki page. And actually, it works out really well. Because we use like Screen Connect and some of the other tools that we use, which are also web-based, we actually have the links right into the servers. So in the wiki page is the link to the server to launch the remote connection, the password, and everything's there. And it's arbitrarily easy to update, but keeping it all in-house and not just letting some third party. This is what you see, like my friend does IT security for a local hospital, one of the big ones. They don't allow anything third party. And there are companies out there, I think SciPortal, I haven't used their software personally, but I've seen people mention it. It's a self-hosted solution that does all IT documentation. There's a couple other companies out there like that. SciPortal, when I did some searching for self-hosted ones, they seem to be kind of the popular ones. But people are really jumping on like the easy solution. But I don't want to set up a server is like the argument here. Like, I don't want to have to manage everything internally myself. Like, are you an IT person? I mean, are you just trying to find a way to make some money in this business and hope that something bad doesn't happen to one of these external companies?
So I'm going to put on my Chris Carruthers hat now.
And oh, Lord.
and have to interject in that case. I don't think I agree that there are a lot of techs that do say that. However, there are other techs that just simply don't have the resources to do that. So, and unfortunately, we don't have the abilities, we have the know-how. We may not have the time to allocate to something like that. That'd be something for us to do when we have the infrastructure in place, the team, et cetera. But me personally, I would rather go and make sure, put it into a third party that's well-respected, that's been around, that actually knows what they're doing, more than me trying to do a self-hosted solution here that I haven't built with proper protocols to protect myself in-house. So, because I feel that they would have a much more better infrastructure security than me trying to put something here locally, like save it on my local desktop and shut off the computer. You know what I mean? Like, that's just, and I'm just trying to think in that case of like, for me just jumping into being full-time IT consultant, I'm involved with so many things until I can build my team and be able to do, like, I'm sure, Tom, this probably took you years to probably try and do, right? To get yourself hosted thing going in, or months once you've actually dedicated some time.
We've been doing it from the get-go, and that's okay. Because I came out of corporate IT where we did this anyways. I mean, my business is 14 years old, so some of these tools didn't even exist 14 years ago when I started. Sure. But I came from corporate IT where it was never a thought to put things externally because, well, back when I set these things up, we still had internal mail servers and no one does that anymore. Right. but maybe there's a business opportunity here to sell small stacks of servers or virtualized machines that you host internally for this. You know, maybe that's
right.
Maybe there's a business model here I'm missing and I'm complaining about something when I should be making a solution for it.
Now, Tom, let me ask you a question. Now, as far as, okay, so I understand the internal and keeping all that stuff in-house. Now, if the building burns down, what happens?
Everything's duplicated offsite.
Okay. So now what are you using to duplicate it offsite? Because obviously it's house, still going,
but
okay. But you're still going over the internet. You're still going out with all this information into another server that's in your house right now, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's all encrypted, though. Okay. So it still maintains in my control. I'm not really worried about anyone cracking the encryption that I use to transport offsite backups. And that's not too hard to do. I mean, you can pre-encrypt most of the backups we do. If you're using like the, we use this, the SolarWinds backup product, it pre-encrypts before it even uploads anyways.
Right. Okay.
Yep. So, and a lot of, that's common with most of them. It's the only way you can be compliant with HIPAA or any of the other compliance is having that. So that's, I mean, that's an important factor. It's backups, and you can back up to an AWS server over a VPN if you want. Even if you hosted this in an AWS server, it's more under your control at that point than if you're completely relying on the fact that a company like, let's say, I'm going to use IT Glue only because they're a real popular one out there. They say we're using best-in-class encryption. You have no visibility under the hood of what they're actually doing.
Right, right.
And we just seen the meltdown over at GitLab last week, if any of you followed that, where someone pressed one instead of two and blew up an entire production database and lost 6 hours of coding data. I mean, and that's a scary thing. GitLab's really, really popular. They're a funded company. They're doing well. And someone pressed one instead of two. It was after I read through the all the notes there. That's what it came down to. The person was tired. He didn't do the backup properly. And the reason they lost only 6 hours was because at least someone did a LVM snapshot of the data at 6 hours. Normally, those are only done every 24.
Oh.
But, I mean, that's a lot of production data for a cloud-hosted company to lose.
Sure, sure.
And it's kind of scary when you're not, you're completely out of control and you're literally at the mercy with no peek under the hood of, we do best practice security. That's the kind of answers you get out of them.
Right.
Which makes me nervous.
One, it's like this though. If you look at, you know, because we can talk about this from a standpoint of take your banking system. You're in, again, any of these financial institutions, government run entities, whatever you want to say, a lot of these companies, they'll tell you the same thing. In my opinion, if you're doing even mediocre encryption, it's kind of like digital and analog. It's either on or off. If you're doing some sort of encryption, it's on, right? And so a lot of times when companies get hacked or whatever, they're getting a bunch of gobbledygook. Nobody's getting the keys. Nobody, you know, because a lot of times, some of these companies, especially like, you know, password companies and whatnot, like take LastPass, for instance, you're the only one that actually has the key.
Right.
To get in there, and they'll tell you if you forget it, and mine's a 32, you know, number letter password. Right. And if I forget it, which I screwed up one time and went to try to change it and mess one number up and almost freaked out because I almost lost like 300 passwords. But yeah, that was an exciting day. So a lot of this stuff, and that's why it's kind of hard because you look at these companies and I look at some of the smaller companies out there. And I hope they're trying to do the same, the good things. I don't know. And so a lot of times when I talk about even things like backups, I want to use a company that's been out there for a while that I know is doing best in practice, that I know is doing the right things because they've been up and running for years. So it's a constant battle because in this industry, man, we've got people coming out of the woodworks all the time with the next latest, greatest thing.
Yes.
And we don't know. You're absolutely right. We absolutely don't know. And this has always been my argument is that even if you could look under the hood, most of us are too stupid to understand what we're looking at. So we're taking it from somebody else that maybe does know how to read. We're taking their word that says, yes, everything's good. And of course, we've seen over the years where people have said that for 20 years. And, you know, all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait a minute. Hey, yeah, there was a Heartbleed thingy that, that's been there the whole time.
Yeah, that the Heartbleed was a pretty scary one there. Well, and I think there's, you know, and I went all the way one way with it, but I think there's a happy middle to be had too of a lot of IT companies. I don't think there should be any question of whether or not should they be using some type of two-factor authentication more. Actually, they really be focusing on like a time-based authentication? It's much safer than text and you're not worried about phone spoofing. A lot of people do not have it turned on. I, you know, Screen Connect being popular, I participate in the forums. I'm shocked at how many IT companies don't even have that on SSL. Ugh. And like, it's so inexpensive. It's not even in, it's a few dollars. It's like, Come on, spend $50 a year for your SSL. I even have a work instruction I put together because we're using the SSL that's the Let's Encrypt one. You can use that with it too. I mean, it's still secure. It works fine.
Sure.
So, and same with Screen Connect, a lot of them aren't using two-factor on that. And I'm like, so you're telling me you have like 400 computers on there and you're not using a two-factor. So if someone guesses your username and password, they have your Screen Connect and they have front-end access to every computer. Just turn it on. You don't even have to have it as a server. That's just a process procedure that a lot of IT people are, I have too much of a workload. So I cut back on my security. And, you know, I'm not all for government standards on things all the time because I don't always find them effective. But I think there could be a little bit more policing in our own industry going, hey, these are the procedures an IT company should follow. Like, this is a consortium of ideas of these are the way we channel documentation. We're only affected by HIPAA, Sarbanes-Oxley, by proxy, by the fact that we have a client that's HIPAA compliant, so we have to follow certain rules in how we handle their data. But there's not really any compliance to say that we should be doing things properly.
Right.
You know, and there's maybe not a good standard because it's such a fast evolving. It's not like medical that's a long time practice. I'm doing stuff today that didn't exist a few years ago. All of us are. So it's ever evolving. But I think constantly thinking about, you know, security and things like that should be really at the forefront of it. If it has two-factor, turn it on. There shouldn't be an exception.
Yes,
matter of fact,
I agree.
The tyranny of the default, that's the problem, that these companies will allow you to use it without two-factor.
Right.
They should start right from the get-go. GFI, that's who we use. They shouldn't give me an option not to use two-factor. Like, you just don't have an option.
Like, that's a good point.
Why do they allow it?
Yeah.
Because that gives a lot of the same thing. Screen Connect, it's a feature you had to turn on. Why not? Out of the box, you have to fight with it to turn that off. Because then you would just do it because you don't feel like fighting with it the other way.
Right, exactly. Yeah, there is the thing where you want ease of use, but at the same time, something like two-factor authentication. And trust me, every time I go to, if I'm resetting a computer or reinstalling a program or something like that, where I've got two-factor authentication, it takes a long time for me to get everything set back up. And I cry about it every time. I really do. I just go, I don't want to do this. But then I go, but would it be worse if my stuff had gotten taken somehow and taken over and then I have no access to it, or I've got to fight for long hours to try to get access back to it? No, you know what? It's easier to take my phone or do whatever you're going to do and use those different apps to do that two-factor authentication. Now, yeah. Tom, if you used, and I know this, they were talking about it back in the day, and I know some companies do use it, not as many as probably people would like, but something like a YubiKey for that double authentication, where you actually have to have a USB key plugged in with a rotating key on it so that it can log into the system and it can't be spoofed by itself.
Yeah, those are pretty clever. I do like the YubiKey concepts. I don't use one. Pretty much me and all of my employees, everything we use is the we're using time-based authentication, mostly Google Authenticator.
Sure.
I've looked at the LastPass one, which is kind of clever, because I use LastPass for password management and I'm using the two-factor inside LastPass, I didn't want all the eggs in one basket. Like, hey, we can just integrate all these things in one big pile. So I just said, it's not that hard to type in on my LastPass and remember this computer for 30 days. Like you said, what's the risk of actually...
Yeah. Exactly.
And LastPass is another, and tools like that are really important because too many IT people get in the habit. We use Slack for communications, but we don't put passwords in Slack. You know, even though it's secure, even though it's locked down, even though it's our account, when we share passwords, all my employees have LastPass accounts, and that's how we share passwords with them. And actually, we push for our clients to get LastPass accounts. So that's how we share client. When we have to reset passwords for them to different web portals and things like that, we just send it to them via LastPass, so I don't have to, like, share a password online with them in any way. Makes it a little bit easier.
And here's the thing, I think a lot of people don't want to deal with things like LastPass for their customer base because they're thinking, oh, this is just more of a time suck. It's more things that I have to do. It's like, if you're, like you said earlier, if you're charging, who cares?
Yeah.
You're charging by the hour. You just charge for the service to set this up for them, teach them how to use it, because in the long run, they're going to be a lot better off. And John has said this many, many times, if you can make your job easier in the long haul, supporting your customers becomes a whole lot easier. So
yes,
really, it's a win-win situation.
Yeah, and up to the point where if, like you said with LastPass, for those who don't like to teach or show because they feel it's a time suck, outsource it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that's easy enough. You're helping your customer. You help the person who is doing the outsourcing for you, And you look like the better guy because you helped out the customer.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. You know, that's spoken like a true businessman right there. You know, you just say, I don't want to do that, but I'll pay someone else to do it. There's different, you know, methodologies you can use for that. The other side of it too is, like, we do all the videos and we have blog posts on things like LastPass. I think I got, like, I don't know, 30,000, 40,000 views on that video. That really drives, one, it drives customers to me. Two, it's a training opportunity. I send them LastPass. It's a tutorial on how to use it, which I got to do another one for 2017 here. But it's that same concept of I do it once in a YouTube video. They can watch a YouTube video over and over again until they get it. And it's a good, secure solution. And my best customers are the ones that have been hit. You know, we had some hit for pretty good amounts of money by having their password stolen and things like that, $20,000 and $30,000 at a time. And they go, okay, that was painful. I guess I'll learn LastPass.
Right. Hey, John, I know that you're all business support. What types of things do you do to help protect your customers from themselves?
Well, let me start at the beginning here. I don't disagree with anything that Tom said. And I've actually probably was in the position he was in now where I was doing a lot of my own self-hosting of my products. And I totally reversed my course. And now I use all third-party companies to store my data. Under the new omnibus rules for HIPAA in 2013, that changed a lot of things where now covered entities, the practices I work for, makes me what's called a business associate. So I am covered by all the rules of HIPAA. So basically that means I have to be just as compliant as a covered entity. So I have to have risk assessments and breach reports and documentation up the wazoo, which is really the bad part about HIPAA, meaning a lot of work of HIPAA. I'm all for the security changes in HIPAA.
Right.
But, you know, the ongoing story with any compliance is, you know, protecting the user against themselves has been the ongoing argument since any of us have started doing this, whether it's compliance related or not. You know, the conversation you have with a client when they sit there and they're just kind of like this, and then you realize they're not hearing anything that you're saying, and you have wasted the last 60 seconds of your life talking to them about the topic. And I don't know if that's just because they don't have time or they don't want to take the time, but Tom is right. It's the customers that have been bit, whether that's some sort of data loss, some sort of infection, some sort of loss of data due to some sort of breach. Probably the best one I had, you know, Jeff, just what you were talking about, the pop-up that came in. I had that at a dental clinic, a brand new client. First week I was there, dental office, the pop-up came, popped up. The hygienist called the number and let the tech support log in. So, you know, under HIPAA, that's a breach.
Right.
You know, so the dentist had to pay for a forensic study, and you know, $13,000 to $15,000 later of forensic studies and lawyers and all that, we spent all that money basically for nothing. So my next word, you know, she basically just looked at me and said, just let's do whatever we need to do to try to make this not happen again. So what I do and what I offer to a lot of my clients is in dental offices and orthodontic offices, they seem to call their little meetings huddles, and they have those maybe once a week or every other week. Well, I'll diddy bop in there once a month for the huddle, and we'll do some training. We call it HIPAA training because you have to have ongoing training for HIPAA compliance. But we'll spend 15 minutes talking about phishing scams or ransomware or locking the computer when they leave and how not to talk about patient data in front of other patients and all of those sorts of things. So, you know, the question you asked me is not a simple one to answer. It'd be the same way as answering how do you protect a computer through multi-layers? And that includes things like second factor or two-factor authentication, having a good UTM device, training, on and on and on. So it's a great way to have a business, to have ongoing revenue, because it never ends.
And I like what you said about actually doing the physical training as far as meeting with them once a month, because I think a lot of times, a lot of us, and through no fault, but the automated tools make a lot of people think they can just throw some monitoring things on a computer and walk away and not have to deal with that versus having these conversations on a monthly basis, weekly basis, whatever it is, to help the customer understand. Because again, things like phishing scams and stuff like that, you can mention it today, and by the end of the week, phew, right over the top of their heads, it's gone. So it's something that has to be constantly reiterated. So the next time when that pop-up comes up, they go, "What? Wait, oh, wait, John just talked about this on Monday. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to call John."
Well, it's just like that customer I talked about at the beginning of the show with the email, where she kept clicking the link, kept clicking the link. I mean, at least she's persistent. But then, you know, when we kind of settled down, I got her on the phone, I remoted in, we looked at the email. I said, "Hey, let's slow down here a little bit. I know you're anxious. Everybody's got a busy day. But you, do you see the two grossly misspelled words in this email?" I mean, you know. And I'm just as guilty as anybody else. You know, you get busy, you get that one email where you're almost click.
Yeah.
You're like,
oh yeah.
Wow. You got to slow down a little bit.
Yep.
And just, there's a vigilance in all of this. And then our job, or I consider it my job, to lock things down as much as humanly possible without making the lives miserable of every user.
Right.
And a lot of that includes training and all that, because, you know, a lot of guys, I've taken over a lot of shops where you walk in there and you can't sit down in the chair without any entering 17 passwords and all that. You got to be able to let the business do business. But then there's also, you have a responsibility to protect patient, customer, whoever data, and your own. So,
right.
I just had a client, they had a larger client, they had a phishing attack. And it was actually, they kind of have an absentee CEO. He's not there very often. And the way they knew it was a phishing attack, when they see an email, they said everything was spelled way too good. They said, "This guy writes in gibberish when he sends us things." So they actually said, whoever crafted this, he does not spell this well.
Wow. Talk about, yeah, talk about opposites. That's pretty funny.
It was like a dead giveaway. Like, he never spells those words right.
Even with things like spell checks.
Get close to getting bid on the money transfer scams. And, you know, and then really what I tell them is that, you know, obviously you can go up, you can look at the message headers, see what the reply to address is, try to verify it on your own. But, you know, how much are you going to ask an end user to do? You know, and a lot of times boils down to, you have to have some non-tech solution in here too. Maybe physically pick the phone up and call your boss before you transfer $50,000. That just might be good. Or have somebody actually sign a physical piece of paper to transfer any amount over X amount of dollars, so you don't get burnt that bad, even if you do a money transfer. So, you know, as geeks, I think we always run to the technical solution. But a lot of times the simplest solution, a piece of paper or a phone call, or even a text to somebody, which I guess would be a technical solution, you know, would solve the problem, would eliminate that. The last one was, the boss just happened to walked into her office manager's office and said, "Hey, what's the money transfer for?" So the timing just worked out perfectly. So she was able to call the bank and say, "Nope." So then I got involved. So, and the email looked legit. It was worded right. Everybody's name was spelled right. But if you went into the message properties, you could see it was a Joe job, but it wasn't who it was from. And the reply address was different. So, I mean, they even had their company logo at the bottom of the email.
Oh, it's not hard to duplicate this stuff anymore. You can take anything off the internet, right? And basically formulate it any way you want. I don't understand. You're right. Some things do take old tech solutions, which are things like picking up the phone and actually, hey, let's try something like, I don't know, communicating maybe, because that seems like a lost art nowadays. That would help probably solve some of those problems when it comes to that stuff. Hey, did you send this over instead of just going, okay.
And I'm sure Tom gets a lot of the same thing. A lot of times I'll get end users that email me to do stuff. Hey, change the password on this account. And then I have to reply back and then copy somebody that has a little bit more authority in the organization. And hey, do you want me to change the password to the, you know, the thing this person shouldn't have access to? And they're like, hell no. So, I mean, heck no. Heck no. You know, so, you know, as the IT guy, don't blindly run into every situation that somebody requests you to do either. You know,
yeah.
Exactly. You wouldn't give the keys to your 11-year-old to drive your car. So, most end users don't need the keys to those cars either.
And that comes into good practice as an IT company, because some of the younger IT companies may not think about that, but users go, hey, the new guy, he doesn't seem to be paying attention. Let me email that new IT guy because he'll up my privileges so I can get to that thing I wanted to.
Right.
He'll unlock my workstation so I can get to Facebook.
Exactly. You know,
in time, I love the emails that I get are from somebody's Gmail account that says, it's Barb, and the organization has 100 employees, and I need you to change the password to this account. Thanks. And I'm like, first of all, I don't know who Barb is. First of all, it's from a Gmail account. You know, okay. Right. Anyways, I'm beating a dead horse, but we get the idea.
Now, Tom, I would love to say that it's just the young people that fall for this stuff, but I think you alluded to this even in the beginning. A lot of companies have been having poor practices for years, and it's how, and quite honestly, in a lot of them, despite themselves, are still in business. Yep. So,
yeah, that reminds me of a story when I used to work help desk at the automotive software firm. And it was a guy who worked at the dealership, was fired that day. And then the next day, and like in the night or early morning, emailed us to remove. And he was the IT director at this store, and emailed us from his Gmail account to remove all these users, which was like the GM, the general sales manager, the used car manager, like everybody who, and to remove them out of the system. So we had assumed, all right, well, maybe the dealer principal wiped house, told the IT director to do this and go from there. So one of my guys was just hired maybe 3 months in and removed these people because he was the first one on the early shift. So when 9 o'clock came around, basically, the general manager called us and asked to speak to me. And I was the help desk manager at the time and called us in and said, hey, we're locked out of our system. We have our lawyers on this. Can you forward me the email that the IT director sent you? I was like, so somebody must have already knew that it was him. So we forwarded him the email. We restated everyone's access. And that's basically what happened from there. So, yeah, it's like you say, it's like the way that all goes through, sometimes you, when you even know it's the right person, you know, it could be a different, if their protocols are not in place, you know, it can make things a little bit rough.
So it sounds to me, the things that we're talking about would either make a good, I don't know, video series, book, information pamphlet, something to get to people to help them understand the things that they need to do, especially for businesses.
Yeah, a nice intro series to your, when you onboard a client.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, maybe I'll do some of that too, is just put some more YouTube videos here. Like, you know, here's the practices we have. Cause I've been wanting to show people, someone's like, how do you use the wiki? I'm like, well, I can do a video on that, I guess. So I might create some fake clients and kind of walk through. So I've walked through on our YouTube channel, lots of how we document things. Sorpshi, I have a whole video on just how we do sales and how we get our business clients because someone asked. So we keep doing more and more videos like that. But maybe this is another video series I do too. It's like, there's another solution for this is consulting on that. And I've thought about doing some consulting as I've, you know, messaged back and forth with IT companies in private. And maybe that's something they want to have me come out there and do is kind of help them get procedures in place. Like, these are the things you need to do. So cause right. I think once you get the understanding of it and you follow procedures make your life easier. Once people kind of get over that. And then I'm sure a lot of you guys know there's so many IT companies are just bad at documentation too. I came from the ISO 4Q1 and Jeff's very familiar with that. We, even our IT department, all 4Q1, all ISO compliant, we do documentation. That has been something from the time I started the business, which is why it's so much easier 14 years later because I've never not done it. Right. But I had to do it when I worked in corporate. So it makes your life easier. We know where everything is.
No, it's a documentation. Here's the problem. Nobody wants to document anything because it takes upfront work. But again, we're firefighters. Okay. We run around, we put out fires all the time. That's how this business kind of runs. But you've got to take the time to be able to, how can I set my business up so that I can take care of the things that I need to do? And so the long term, I will have all this documentation in place so that I can refer to something and spend less time in the future than I'm going to spend now in setting it up. And that is just a long way of saying, stop being lazy.
Yes.
Document, document, document.
I would guarantee you, I would bet my business that one of the reasons Tom is so successful is because he documents.
Yeah.
I would bet money that is on a weighted average. That is one of the highest weights why he is so successful.
Yep.
Period.
I agree.
Well, there's plenty of people smarter than me. They just don't document things.
Exactly. They haven't put those things in place. Yeah, exactly. All right.
I'll put in the show notes a list of, I mean, there's just 1,000 of them too, like IT Glue, Monkey Box, all that. I'll put a list in the show notes of a bunch of documentation companies.
Yeah, and even
look your RMM might do it as well.
That's what I was just going to say. Your RMM or your CRM systems you currently have may even have a wiki built in. I know Repair Shopper is who we use. That's they have their own wiki for each customer too.
Yeah,
Now, the other thing to keep in mind with something Tom brought up, you know, you go to the IT Goop page and it does just say, hey, we're secure. We use best practices. Yay. You know, with a lot of the compliance that I do, like with EHR or health record management software or dental management software, I go in with the practice when I'm involved and I say, before we even start talking about price, here's our risk assessment and here's your questionnaire that you need to send to them. They need to provide all this information for HIPAA before we can proceed with even negotiating any sort of price. Because if they can't provide that information, they're out. So, I mean, depending on the industry you're in, there's a NIST document I'll put in there. There's HIPAA, FINRA, Sarbanes-Oxley, blah, 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 blah. You know, but there's about 1,000 of them. So make sure if you're helping somebody that trades or does banking or stocks, you have rules you need to follow. So, you know, brush up on that. Or if you're doing a doctor's office or a dentist office or PCI compliance, credit card stuff, there's a bunch of stuff you need to know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's all out there. You can Google it.
There you go.
You just need to know to Google it.
Yeah, exactly.
Ask the Google.
Let me Google that for you.
And everything out there is absolutely true.
Yes, 100%. If it's on the internet, it's got to be true.
Alternative Google answers.
Your Honor, Google said that.
Yeah, exactly. Google who? So is there anything that we haven't covered as far as this? I think we've kind of covered that IT companies as a whole need to get better at this. And we all have the biggest room we have is the room for improvement. And we can all improve our game and make sure that we're doing things correctly. And again, a lot of people look at this as a, oh my gosh, I've got so many things to do. No, we all started from ground zero. So start and do a little bit of something and then keep moving it forward. Keep improving yourself. Keep learning. Keep understanding the changes in the industry and keep up with them to the best of your ability. It, again, it's not a perfect game, but improvement is better than doing nothing.
Keep listening to PodNuts. You'll get these ideas keep coming through. And
there you go.
Yeah, something is definitely better than nothing. I mean, I spent a lot of time on this, and it's continuous improvement, period.
Absolutely. Yep. We've all been doing this a long time, and it is. It's constantly. I'm like, why didn't I do this like 10 years ago, 15 years ago? Oh, wait, that wasn't available or whatever. So, all right. So let's go ahead and move into our phone. We're going to open up the phone lines and go into our email portion of the show. Phone lines are open. The call-in number is 1-888-697-0162. And let's go into our first email. All right. This is from Michael Woodward. Said, I want to follow up on the episode about regulation. The chip for credit cards was implemented by the financial institutions on their own and not government regulation. It was done to prevent regulation from coming in. The chip is supposed to be built for security so that you only had the private key to prevent people from being able to copy the data from the magnetic strip. And again, that's Michael Woodward, Excel Computer Services. All right. So, yeah, a lot of times we forget we were talking about government regulation and things being regulated by the government. And that is true. This is the chip and pin or chip and pin here is not regulated.
Our chip and sign here.
Chip and sign. Yes. Thank you. That we don't have chip. Well, that's okay. But wait a minute. When I go to the grocery store, I gotta type in my 4-digit, number.
What's your debit card?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, debit you do. Not credit card.
Yeah. Obviously there's no pin on a credit card. Right. See, I was looking
at everywhere else on the planet, it's chip and pin.
Exactly, except here. So, which again, I don't know. Does it help? I don't know. It costs me more time. That's all I know. But yeah, that's true. I guess there is no way to. I don't know. I guess they're with a chip. I'm sure somebody's going to make a way to actually get the information out of there at some point.
Well, there's already a piece of tape. Over it, if you listen to Steve Gibson, there's already a little piece of scotch tape looking thing that you can put over the chip that bypasses the whole thing.
Awesome. What are you gonna say, Tom?
The problem really comes down to that it's it's a replay attack. It's the fact that you're sending a card and transmitting it. That's what allows them to do it. I know not everyone's a huge fan, but like there's Google Pay and Apple Pay, but because they're creating one-time nonces and one-time packets to do it, you can't reuse that data that was sent via Google Pay a second time. So it kind of eliminates the problem. And we're advanced enough as a civilization. If you're not paying cash, we can do something, you know, advanced enough like that, that would solve the problem. And we wouldn't have these issues because my next video I'm doing is about Hardee's that just got hacked. And Arby's.
Arby's got okay. Hacked. Yeah.
I was like, I was just going to go to Hardee's later.
Well, Arby's seems to be cleaned up. So there's that.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I'm almost going back to the point now where I'm like, it's easier for me to carry cash on me than to use any of these things. Because I agree with you, Tom. If Google Pay and all that stuff would work, Samsung Pay, whatever, any of the Apple Pay, if any of those things would work at every establishment I went to, I would use it. But it's like it works 30% of the time. In the other 70%, you're like going, let me.
Yeah. Well,
come on, take my payment.
look at Heart. You know, we'll talk about Arby's real quick. There's no pain for them. Everyone's been breached, so you're not even worried about brand reputation anymore because every major company from sure. Target to you name it has been breached, so there's not even a brand reputation. They're going to pay a few dollars in fines that'll mean nothing to their bottom line. They'll write it off. Until they force these companies with these problems to really shell out the dough, and I think we should each get $100 every time we're credit cards are breached. If they had to shell out that kind of dough, they would go, wait a minute here. Let's get serious about this dirty thing.
Right.
Because this really costs money. Right now, it's like the Vizio thing. It's a slap on the wrist. There's no pain involved for the customers, for the people that could have done it better.
Right. Exactly.
Well, in a nutshell, I mean, the whole thing is kind of ridiculous. Like even for if you were going to take credit cards online on your site, the only two things you really need to verify are the PAN, the credit card number, and the expiration date.
Yeah.
All right. Those are the only actually two required lines. You don't have to do the CVC. You don't have to do the address. You don't have to do those things to be compliant. So, I mean, there's only so many, you know, there's only so many, what am I trying to say? So many combinations until you can figure out what's going on with just those two things. So if you have the PAN, there's only so many dates that you can have. So without the other things, it's kind of ridiculous. So eventually somebody can get that information and then move on to something else. And even like Visa, I don't remember what podcast I was listening to. You can try as many times as you want to try to breach a Visa card across the planet. MasterCard is the only one that limits it. So if they notice that a particular PAN has been used a lot, they'll freeze it automatically.
Okay. All right.
So
well, that's good to know. Not that that helps much.
Visa,
but you know,
Visa's the largest. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, thank you, Michael. Appreciate the email on that and reiterating that yeah, it's they're trying to regulate themselves, but I don't know.
Something's better than nothing.
Yeah, I agree. All right. The second email is from Jerry Bransfield. Jeff, a friend of mine is working on a school network with a limited budget. Yeah. School network, limited budget. Those two things do not go hand in hand. He's looking for a wireless router, which can handle approximately 100 iPads and probably just as many phones that are sitting in the lockers, all within a very small area. I'm assuming he has the bandwidth to handle the volume of traffic. Any suggestions will be greatly appreciated. Jerry Bransfield. Thank you for the email, Jerry. And what do you guys say? Wireless router for a school?
Via Unify.
Unify? Okay.
We're big fans of Unify. They're inexpensive, easy to deploy. They you can buy the edge router and then a Unify device cheaper together. Actually, you can buy a couple of them for which you could buy one of those, you know, higher end prosumer, if you want to call it, ones. Easy to, like I said, they're pretty easy to manage. We've put those in entire school districts. The cloud controller software and everything, it's all easy to use. Set up a computer on it. It's inexpensive. I think it'd be a pretty easy way to do that.
Do you know the cost on that off the top of your head, Tom?
You can buy the edge routers starting at about $49, and the Unifies themselves are like $69 each for the basic ones. The long range ones, they're like $99.
Okay.
They're pretty cheap.
All right, cool. John, what would you use?
I would do the new Open Mesh A-Series in there with some sort of I like the edge router idea. That's awesome. That's inexpensive. The A-Series is more expensive than that solution. It's going to be between $200 or $300, depending on what you want. But it'll also give you a free cloud control panel, allow you to do a little bit of guest Wi-Fi, as well as have some more control, maybe visually. Depending on this kind of school, I'm guessing that they don't have full-time IT support. That's kind of like why I like the OpenMess solution, because it's simple and you don't need a full-time manager to do it. So,
gotcha. All right. Open mesh. Paco?
Oh, this is outside of my wheelhouse. I mean, I'm starting to now just get into open mesh and business routing and networking. So I would probably lean toward open mesh, but I'm starting to now just get into all that.
Well, Paco and I just went to a webinar. What was it, last Tuesday for open mesh?
Yeah, Tuesday. I think John was on it too, if I'm not mistaken.
Were you, John?
I was.
Okay. All right. Cool. And so they're supposed to be sending out, free access points.
Yeah.
So we'll get to play around.
Oh, did you guys sign up for one of those?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nice.
So we'll see. But so Tom, so any of these solutions though are going to be able to do 100 iPads and let's say 100 phones. So 200 devices.
Each Unify, you're going to get about 100 devices on each one.
Okay.
124. So two of them, and the Unify, they have a cloud controller as well. So there's a cloud interface. You don't have to be on premise to manage. And it can do load balancing between them too. So,
okay. All right.
Plus it does the automatic handoffs when you deploy multiple ones. Cause as the name kind of implies, Unify, they act as one giant network. I've used the mesh ones too. Those are a nice product as well.
Okay. Very cool. All right, so Jerry, hopefully that helps you out, and pass along those. But you know, a lot of these things, sometimes you gotta, I guess, do your research a little bit and figure out which one you're going to use, and just go with that one, and see what you can find out. So, all right, and let's see, we have a phone call coming in, so let's go ahead and take this. And this is Nick from Houston, Texas. Works at a retail store and has a question about a laptop. All right. Let me unmute this. Hey, Nick, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Doing pretty well.
Good. You had a question about a laptop?
Yes, I do, actually. So my aunt, she has a laptop, an Asus laptop, with a Core i5 processor in it, and basically, what's been going on with it is she'll be sitting down working on it like usual, nothing much. And for whatever reason, about 5-10 minutes after having it on, she will all of a sudden get like, you know, weird, freaky colors, if you're on high or something, you start seeing weird colors. And sometimes the screen, and it'll be on the screen. And sometimes she would have to do to sometimes get rid of the issue, which you just change. Just, you know, kind of somewhat close the lid a little bit or pull it back open, and sometimes the issue will go away or it'll stay there. What's also been happening too is that issue, not only will she turn some weird colors on the screen, like if you're changing the hue or the tint, but then what would happen too is like the screen would, she would be watching something and the screen would just get brighter and brighter, and whatever she was watching, it would stay still frozen and the screen would just get brighter. And then go back to what it was doing before. So that's pretty much what's going on with it. I don't know, maybe you or anyone on the computer repair podcast happen to know that issue.
So when I've seen this issue in the past, usually it can point to one of three things, I'll say. And one would be the screen itself could have the actual screen itself could be going bad. The other thing, which is more likely because you've moved the lid and it actually does some changing, is the cable going from the motherboard to the screen. Or sometimes, I haven't seen this as much lately, but sometimes the video chip could actually be heating up on that particular motherboard. And when it's heating up, it will create hairline fractures in the solder joints between the chip and the motherboard itself. So those are the three things that I normally see. What do you guys think?
Yeah, and I was thinking also too. So, you know, your guess is mine.
Tom, anybody else got a, or is that pretty much cover those?
Yeah.
Did you say the computer's freezing up? Is the computer freezing up too, or is it just the screen going wacky?
No, it's literally like as soon as the the screen wants to get brighter. Whatever was on it, whatever image on the screen, it stays frozen like 5 seconds. While the screen gets brighter, and then once it's done that, then it'll go right back to what it was.
Maybe ambient light sensor or something on that thing.
A lot of the Dells have that. Not really. It's a basic i5 laptop. Nothing much. Right.
Okay. All right. Yeah,
Jeff, I heard you, buddy.
Yeah, I was going to see that. Yeah, probably the most inexpensive thing to try is put a new screen in there. A lot of times when I'm having those types of problems, though, I'll order a screen and a cable to replace both of them just in case. And then if it's the chip on the motherboard, that's a whole nother issue. Then you got to figure out whether it's worth it.
Yeah, so basically the least expensive, repair to, if it's not those, and, then, it might be the video chip, in which case Chuck will get a new laptop.
Right, exactly. All right, well, Nick, I appreciate you calling in and asking the question.
Okay, you're welcome, thanks.
All right, have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.
The third email, and I'm going to break this into sections for the last part of the show here. And what we'll do is answer the questions along the way. But this says, new listener checking in to the Podnuts Computer Repair Podcast crew. That's a long word right there. Hello, just started listening to your show a couple weeks ago and I wanted to say thank you. I love it. A little about myself, recently retired after a 30-year career as an automotive tech. I've been working my way through school along the way, A+, CompTIA, PC Support Specialist Cert, and with any luck, I will finally finish my associate's degree in computer science this fall. Currently working as a Geek Squad advanced repair agent, web design hobbyist, 12 or so sites at the moment. I have been working on computers since around the Windows 95 days. I joined your live chat and registered my name as EKYM. I'm not even going to pronounce that, or I'm not going to try. I hope to catch your show live for the first time tomorrow. And seems to me that I have a lot in common with your show, as I'm sure many of the people who contact you do. While listening to your podcast, I had a few observations that popped out at me. Very good episode, The Tool Bag. I picked up a few tips from the show notes section. You can thank John Dubinsky for that. He brought a lot of tools, and he did a lot of note-taking for that one, so that was awesome. I noticed you did not mention SpinRite. I'm sure you've heard of it, but it is a very useful tool for hard drive repairs if you need a tool like that to repair minor corruption problems, for example, before an Acronis clone. So, yes, we didn't mention SpinRite. I don't know how we missed that one, to be honest with you. Does anyone here on this panel actually have used SpinRite before? I've used it like once or twice.
I've used it a lot. Very limited success. And I'd realize the reason why is there's when the hard drive's clicking and banging, it's clicking and banging. It's physically broken.
Yes.
But we've had it save us a couple times, because God knows nobody backs up anything. And that's usually what makes them come to us.
Right.
I lost it all. So it has saved a couple times. So it's paid for itself quite a bit over for what we charge for data recovery. But I will admit it doesn't. I've told people, oh, it doesn't work. I'm like, well, if the hard drive is going bad, it's just another tool to try. It's not gonna repair a death hard drive.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's my last resort usually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, either that or a program called HDD Regenerator that I seem to have more success with. But Tom's right. If it's physically gone, it's physically gone.
And all we're trying to do at that point, I think, is just get access to the data on there so we can copy it, either clone it, or copy the information over to a good working hard drive. So in those situations, yes. Yeah, but I've heard a lot of people have used the tool and it does work. And that's from Steve Gibson over at grc.com. Let's see. All right. I'd like to understand more about DNS in a local business situation. If you might spend a few minutes talking about it in one of your casts. I have a family member's local business I do the IT for, Windows Server 2012 and 6 Windows 10 PCs in a small shop. I'm struggling to keep the network sharing of printers and RDP working consistently. I'm suspecting the Comcast business class router might not be updating the routing fast enough as the IPs change or something. And he gives the website. I'm not going to mention that because I'm not sure if I should. So what do you guys say as far as, something like that? What's some of the things that he could be looking for in that situation?
Oh, DNS or does he mean DHCP? Is he talking about his local IPs or is he talking about host names?
Well, yeah, remote desktop protocol. Yeah, you got printers and remote desktop protocol. I would imagine internal.
If he's new, it might be something he's overlooked here. It should be that the server 2012 should be providing DHCP and DNS. I've seen people do this where they go, oh, I'll just let the Comcast router do it.
Right.
And they don't turn it off in server 2012. So you, one, have computers disappearing, getting reissued IP addresses. Also, hopefully, he does not have them set to Comcast IP address for the DNS. They have the server 2012. Or if not, you'll have all kinds of name resolution problems. So That might be a good place to start looking is turn it off on the Comcast router.
And if you're running a Windows server, you should be using the DHCP and the DNS through that server, right? That's really the only way to go.
Yeah, unless you want problems with printers and networks.
Exactly.
Dropping.
We have enough problems with those, even if we do it right.
Yeah, when you do it right, there's problems. So definitely it's something that's overlooked. Some people just are used to the Comcast and they had it set up like that before, but definitely you want to make sure it's doing both DNS and DHCP.
And that's
the primary thing there is you just want to make sure you have one thing doing it.
Yes.
That you don't have two things fighting to provide it. Yes.
That's the other thing too. That kind of irritates me. And this is a tangent, but the business aspect of things like Comcast or whatever ISP out there, right? Why can't I go and buy a Motorola, Aris, whatever modem? It's just a stupid, dumb modem to pass the information through to a proper router inside of a business. But they're like, no, if you're going to have our service, you have to use our router. It's like, why?
Bridge mode.
What is it? Yeah, exactly. But here's the problem. Go do a firmware update on those. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, hey, I'm sorry. Bridge mode came back on by accident. My bad.
Yeah.
It's like, come on.
You can request certain equipment. You can still get some of the older equipment that's still good, like the Netgear cable gateway or the SMC gateway, and then put those in the bridge mode. But yeah, you're talking about the Cisco box, the horizontal box, which provides a lot of issues, especially with wipe systems and all that, because even in bridge mode, we have problems with that, with a lot of communication. So yes, Comcast is horrible on that. I agree.
Yeah. Well, I think they all do it. And it's like, why do you think your solution is so much better? And probably it has to do with support or something, which really?
Well, I don't know. Some of the providers don't. Like I see the guys in the chat talking about WOW. I got a couple locations here in Michigan that use WOW. And you just tell them, I just want a modem. And they're like, okay.
Oh, that's, yeah. WOW is really forgiving on that. You could just read off the MAC address and plug in your own. They don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved
beautiful.
WOW until I didn't.
For those that don't know, you can go back into previous episodes of the Podnuts Computer Repair Podcast.
Yeah.
Jeff, why don't you tell us about it?
No, yeah. We're not. You can go back and listen to the old episodes and listen to my rant on that. I was bummed, but anyways, I'm back to being Comcastic. Anyways, with my data cap, man, if I could just get a hold of somebody, I would choke. I mean, I would, hug them. dude, I am bumping up against my cap every single month. It is ridiculous.
That's why I'm with WOW.
Well, if I could, I would, but they kept dropping my signal and nobody could figure it out. I had third tier engineers out here and I work with them over like 2 months, every weekend, hours, hours and hours. Nobody could figure it out. Well, I'm the only one consuming this much data. I get it. I'm dropping. Nobody else is because they're not on it as much as me and my family are. So I understand that there's a problem. They try grounding and anyways, I'm not going down there. All right, let's continue on the email. Paco, darn you. all right. I noticed so far there have been no positive or negative stories about Geek Squad. Yeah, there was in past episodes and was wondering what your thoughts were about it. Are you taking if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all stance on it, Paco? Am I taking a if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all stance?
No, I think what it is that we talk more in generals because we don't want to get sued, I think, is the bigger part of it. But it's more of we don't, there's no point on mentioning specific names because a lot of them all do the same similar things. And it's not all the tech's fault. It's more of the organization and the processes that they put onto them. So we have talked about it, but we talk about them on a very big, vague overall stance versus really giving it to the Geek Squad guys.
Yeah, exactly.
I lack such a sensor, so if you go to my YouTube channel, I rant about other techs and call them out by name. And maybe you guys seen my incident with PC-Matic.
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
I baited them, and they called me out on it. And I interviewed them.
It was good. That was a good video, though. A lot of good information.
You know, it's like anything else. There's some good Geek Squad techs. Just like when you get a good Comcast tech that comes out and goes the extra mile, you're like, wow. You know?
Yep. But exactly.
In general, yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, a lot of generalizations. I don't mind calling, you know, if Geek Squad is ripping people off or whatever, I'll tell you that. But as far as the individuals that work for Geek Squad in the text, they're just doing what they're told. And so let me continue on with this. He says, I can tell you it's very difficult to do the best job possible without the restrictions placed on you by the company. Understood. Our list of unapproved tools by far outweighs the list of approved tools. Which is really weird because back in the day, they actually had a disk that was made up specifically of specific tools that they had to run. So I'm surprised that there's a list of unapproved tools and approved tools. Standard operating procedures make it twice as difficult to do things as a client data and such as client data protection and things. But I find that so far working has helped me learn and fill in some experience gaps. And that's good. Geek Squad is really all about customer service. That's good too. I truly enjoy helping people and teaching them. It's a young person's job because of the pay, but in my position of not needing the income and being an older guy, I'm getting enjoyment out of it at this point. And the older clients seem to appreciate speaking with somebody closer to their age. Yes, just don't lie to them. I can't tell you how many technicians I've talked to in there. No, you can't do this. And I'm like going, I bite my tongue. Cause I'm like going, okay, just ring me out. I'm taking this laptop home. I'm done. Anyways. All right. I really have no idea what direction I'm heading towards in the future. I thought about starting a business after I fill in some of those gaps, but I'm still not really sure. You don't have to wait. You can start today. I used to love working on cars, but after 30 years of doing it, I don't anymore. I'm with you there. I used to do all that stuff and I don't anymore. That's why I lease. I always have loved working with computers, but I'm afraid if I continue to work in this field, I might not at some point. Some days are better than others.
I can attest to that.
Yeah. But ultimately, if you love technology and it's something that you want to continually keep learning, you can find a lot of satisfaction in it also. Possibly I could take a job in IT for a local company, but it might be difficult to find the right fit. Not sure if I ever want to work full time again. Learning a lot from your podcast about this possible career path and just wanted to let you know there is at least one more guy out there who is Michael McDowell. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate the email. And hopefully that's answered some of your questions. And I say start today. You can start today and just start fixing computers and you can get some things lined up. And we've talked about those in the various podcasts and we have that information to get you started. So. Any other thoughts on it from anyone here?
No.
All right. That was the last email for the show. And look at that, just in time. Perfect. All right. So I appreciate you guys coming out today and sharing with the audience. It's been great. Tom, if people want to find out more about you and your videos, which you do all kinds of crazy things from flying drones to riding motorcycles in the snow to electrocuting things, you are a complete and utter nut, my friend, but I enjoy every video.
You can find all of my nuttiness at lawrencesystems.com or look up Thomas Lawrence on Facebook. I accept all but the spammers friend requests.
Awesome. Well, appreciate you coming out and sharing your knowledge and great topic for today. It's been great.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
No problem. All right. And Paco, if people want to find out more about you and what you're up to, where could they do that?
They can find me here at the Computer Repair Podcast, or they can find me over at YFNCG, your friendly neighborhood computer guy, with my good friend Matthew Rodella for the Computer Business Podcast.
And John, where can people find out more about you?
I'm going to be over at Lawrence Systems YouTube channel for about the next, as I scroll through these, probably about the next week going through all these. So, because I haven't watched one yet. This is freaking awesome. Wow. Maybe I'll try to post some on here so you can find me at mavengroup.net. But that's it.
All right. Sounds good. Appreciate you coming out and sharing. Come join us live for the Computer Repair Podcast every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern over at podnets.com/Computer Repair Podcast Live. Join in on the conversation by calling in live and hanging out in the chat room. We have audio available over at podnets.com or subscribe using your favorite podcatcher. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, Computer Repair Podcast. Send your questions and feedback to podnuts@podnuts.com. If you want to leave us a voicemail, which we will play on the show, you can do that at 1-888-697-0162. And if you want to support this show, you can go to patreon.com/computer repair podcast. I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts, the Computer Repair Podcast. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.